And I would say that if we compare it to the factors in the Manson case, in that case, the officer was 2 feet away, so he was about the same distance away that this officer was from the man in the truck. The officer there did have the advantage of natural light in the apartment, and I think he was in the apartment for 5 minutes or so. The court said he was a trained observer. He gave an accurate description. He was certain. That was 2 days later, so it wasn't just a matter of hours as it was in this case. But it's the same distance. It is slightly different circumstances in that it's at night, and he's looking at the face in the rearview mirror of the truck. But nonetheless, the court appropriately found he had an opportunity to see the person from relatively close up. And I would note, in the Nava Ruiz case, which was cited in the defense briefs, the court called the one photo procedure suggestive, but it concluded that the four of the five reliability factors were satisfied. Now, in that case, it was estimated that the officer witness saw the individual for a minute and a half from 50 feet away, but that he showed sufficient attention and no doubt whatsoever, and that the identification was made between 24 hours, although the court found that the description found was very general, so it found that only four of the five factors were satisfied. Now, in the present case, we may have a short period of time, as was true in that case, but the officer was considerably closer at 2 feet away than 50 feet away. And we also have an identification that's made much more quickly and not just within 24 hours. So, yes, I started on this by answering your question about whether the distance away the officer is would play into the reliability, and it certainly would, but I think that it's satisfied in this case. The remaining, one of the remaining cases cited by the defense is the Lopez-Lopez case, and in that case, the court found that it was not an unnecessarily suggestive procedure where the officers had chased the driver of a speedboat in a boat, and then had gone back to the police station and had found the suspect sitting in the police station, and said that they're finding the driver in the police station and immediately identifying him as such was not impermissibly suggestive. So in that case, the court didn't go on to apply the five-factor test. It is interesting to note that that case, I suppose, would involve the question of inadvertence. And it's true that this is not at all inadvertent. As you pointed out, the officer went out of his way to find the photograph. In looking briefly at the Howard case, counsel has urged that it needs to be limited to sort of its facts where a suspect has been immediately apprehended. But I think that that's a limitation which really doesn't make sense given the reasoning of the case. The reasoning of the case is that the officer is a trained observer, that he has an interest in capturing the right person, that he can be expected to be relatively calm, deliberate, and less suggestible than a victim or witness of a crime, and also that he's familiar with identification procedures, so he's not going to be startled or distracted by the circumstances. And I think that applies equally to the photo viewing in this case as to the show-up procedure in the Howard case.
Let me ask you a little bit about the rationale in the Howard case. Mm-hmm. When it's talking about the distraction and the startling, is it not discussing bringing somebody to the scene of where the offense was if they were a potential victim or witness?
Well, that's always true, yes, in a show-up, but it's also true in a photo array that there's a question of whether the witness is subject to official coercion. So maybe startle isn't the right word in that context, but it's a question of whether someone is going to feel coerced by the circumstances of the official procedure. And the cases seem to say that an officer witness is going to be less suggestible and not coerced under the circumstances.
Do we just assume that this particular officer has the necessary training to be familiar with identification procedures, or does the prosecution have a burden to ask some questions in the suppression hearing to find out what his level of experience and training is with respect to ID procedures?
Well, Your Honor, I think that we can assume that an officer has graduated from the police academy and has had standard training in the area. And that's what we mean when we say he's a trained observer. I suppose it might be useful that that's questions that could be asked in the course of the investigation. But I think we take it as a given that this is the officer's job and that he has proper training for it. The one case I think that I haven't talked about, the one federal case in the briefs, is the Smith case, which was also a Massachusetts district case. That case is extremely funny because that case involved an officer who'd given four different contradictory accounts of his identification, making him seem not very reliable to begin with. But it's interesting that the district court distinguished the Manson case because the agent was not alone but with another officer at the time that he viewed it, the one photo. So it seems that this is important, that the officer was alone and at his leisure to have viewed the photo rather than in the presence of other officers, which the Smith court found important. The court found in that case that the viewing of 45 seconds was a very short period of time, that the officer's attention was not properly focused on the suspect because he was afraid of getting shot. There were varying descriptions, and it occurred almost 2 months later. So, whereas that's the only case, I think, that is discussed in the briefs where the officer's identification was not permitted to be admitted at trial. That case has some very special circumstances, including, as I said, the fact that the officer gave a lot of different accounts of his viewing the photograph, and also the fact that it was almost 2 months later. And here, the officer viewed that photograph the very same night, so it's among the quickest. And when we're talking about memory, the Brown case urges that the quickest way for the officers to tell if they were seeking the right guy was to look at the photo, which they did, that it was permissible apparently under the circumstances. And that's what the officer did here, that he looked at the photograph. And while no suspect had been apprehended at the time, we have had a very dangerous event where there was this high-speed chase with a very, very reckless driver. There was a one-car crash of the truck, and there's someone still at large. So there's a real reason for the officers to want to identify the suspect and move on.
Before I forget, Ms. Rohrbaugh, I should have asked you this up front. Counsel mentioned Perry versus New Hampshire, and that hadn't been cited. Do you want an opportunity to respond to that? Not now. If you would like, you can do so in writing. If you don't want to, that's okay too.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have not had the opportunity to read the case, so I don't know if I have observations on it that might be germane. It does seem that from counsel's description of it, that case involved the principles of inadvertence in government action. And so to the extent that we are talking about inadvertence, we have talked about it, and I would agree that there is government action here in the officer's viewing.
Well, let's do this. If you wish to respond to it, as in the previous case, within 3 working days, no more than 2 pages, pursuant to our rules, okay?
Thank you. I would urge this court, I think there are 3 ways to affirm the ID in this case. One is by following Howard and saying that you don't have to do Neil B. Biggers. The second is by following the cases that say that it's not an unduly suggestive procedure. And the third is by saying that the officer's identification was reliable based upon the circumstances. I thank this court for the time and attention, and I ask you to affirm the defense conviction.
You have 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Your Honors, the state maintains that there was a proper hearing below, but I want to read to you what the trial court says at the end of the hearing. And so, as indicated by the Howard case and by the arguments that we've had at the very beginning, in looking at this from in a situation where a police officer, an investigating police officer, is doing the identification, it's obviously much, much different than a witness is doing the identification, if for no other reason than the fact that the officer is doing the investigation and part of his work, whereas witnesses aren't part of the investigative process. Your Honors, Just as the prosecutor below came into the suppression hearing believing that Howard ended the story, the district court more or less believed the same thing. And I don't think that it did the second analysis or the second prong of the Neal analysis. I believe it only talked about one or two of the factors. Now, if this court reads our Supreme Court case in Bernal v. People, our Supreme Court indicated that that is not enough. And in that case, they determined that that wasn't a proper hearing. Your Honors, I do want to talk about briefly the state's contention that we did have a dangerous situation here and somebody was at large and that this somehow justified skipping the normal due process procedures. Your Honors, there certainly is an exception to that rule in the case law where you have somebody who's at large, perhaps armed and dangerous. And I'm not going to downplay what happened in this case in terms of the eluding. I'm not going to suggest to the court that eluding isn't serious. But the fact remains is that police didn't even contact my client until 2 days after the event. I don't think that the exigency that you see in these other cases was present here. Your Honors, the state mentions Brown to suggest that this procedure wasn't impermissibly suggestive. And as the state correctly notes, the court in Brown found salient the fact that in that case, the procedure used by the investigating officer didn't imprint the suspect's mind impermissibly in their heads. But the reason for that, Your Honors, is because in that case, the officers had picked up the suspect's accomplices who knew the suspect. And I want to point out to you that there's a very good reason, or there's a very obvious reason why Manson wasn't applied in Brown and why they didn't determine that this was unnecessarily suggestive. And that's because in Brown, the people who had identified the defendant Brown were not strangers to Brown. They knew him. They worked with him. They point out in Manson, which is true in this case, that Officer Galbraith is a stranger to my client and to that suspect. And so you do have this concern about misidentification because the investigating officer does not know the person he is identifying. In Brown, we didn't have that really because the real identification came from the witnesses who worked with Brown. And so the issue in that case was really witness credibility and not mistaken or unduly suggestive ID. Your Honors, a couple other points. One way to distinguish this case from Manson, at least in the second analysis, and I point to this in the briefs, is that the circumstances here, Officer Galbraith wasn't working undercover, and he didn't go into this situation knowing that he would be called into court to specifically identify anyone. And that's one factor the court found very important in Manson, is that they...
Pardon me, though.
Yes.
If I may, he was making a traffic stop, and... Isn't that a circumstance where he may anticipate going into court to ID someone, even if there hadn't been the eluding?
Well, he may anticipate it, Your Honor. But it's my position, at least, that in Manson, if you look at Manson, that's something that the court noted because he was working undercover. He knew he would have to because he was not the officer who made the arrest. I think that was part of the whole situation was he would go, he would view, he would make the buy, then he would point officers based on a physical description to go and arrest. He knew that he was going to be doing this. Also, Your Honor, the circumstances here were stressful, as the state acknowledges, and that is one factor that actually makes the process more unreliable. You see that in the Henderson case out of New Jersey and other cases that indicate what sorts of things have an effect on memory, and one of them is stress. Your Honors, as I indicated in my briefs and as I've argued, I urge this court to reverse. I think from the record that reversal is appropriate. However, as I've argued, the trial court did not apply the right standard, and at the very least, my client under Bernal v. People is entitled to a correct hearing on this matter. So absent reversal, I respectfully ask that this court remand with instructions to the trial court to not only apply the correct analysis, but to understand that this extraneous evidence gathered is a factor that actually hurts the process.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.